Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In today's episode, we speak with CEO of River, Alex Leishman. Alex walks us through his vision for creating the most trusted Bitcoin bank, as well as providing some fascinating context on their success to date. Along with that, a glimpse of their roadmap going forward. We hope you enjoy, and as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you enjoy the content, please remember to subscribe, follow, or share, as this helps us greatly. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz, along with Lynn Berstow. Today, we're excited to welcome Alex Leishman from River. Alex, welcome. We're big fans of what you're doing at River. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So River helps both individuals and businesses buy, sell, use, and store Bitcoin. We'll get into all of that. But maybe before we get into, you know, the ins and outs of River and how you've gotten to build one of the most successful companies in the space, what's a little bit more about you, Alex? I guess, you know, where do you come from? What was your background before Bitcoin and story that got you to River? We like to start there.
Well, I was born and raised in Maryland, right near Washington, D.C. My parents were originally from West Virginia, so I had an interesting, you know, mix of cultures at home. And I was always very interested in technology as a kid, studied aerospace engineering in college, and then also fell down the economics rabbit hole on the side, just reading books about economics. And I think that combination of engineering and economics and some of my family history as well laid the groundwork to, you know, for that spark to ignite an interest once I read the Bitcoin white paper.
Excellent. And your academic or professional background is, I mean, you're both CEO and CTO of Rivers. So, you know, did you start more on the development side and then get more into the business side of things? Or I guess how did that unfold?
Yeah. So I moved to San Francisco. So I graduated college in 2012 and I did 1 year in management consulting, which I really didn't like at all. I came across Bitcoin at that time though. And because I was taking some web applications courses online, I wasn't a software engineer by training. I did aerospace engineering, but we learned a little bit of programming. And then I came across Bitcoin taking a web applications class on Coursera that was actually taught by Balaji Srinivasan. And that's how I found out about Bitcoin. And then within, I would say, 6 months, I had moved to San Francisco to pursue a career as a software engineer to work at Bitcoin. And so I did a programming boot camp at first because I didn't have a job and I had no experience building web applications. And eventually got a job at a Bitcoin startup called MyCoin. It was kind of like Coinbase for Taiwan. It was based in Palo Alto and they're still running today. It was funny. Before I moved to San Francisco, I was just constantly reading everything I could online about Bitcoin. I was in Reddit or Bitcoin. I was like reading Bitcoin Talk. I was trying to work on Bitcoin projects. And I thought before I went to San Francisco that everyone in San Francisco would be working on Bitcoin. I thought this was obviously like the biggest thing we could like happening right now. I was just, and then when I got to San Francisco, like it was just this niche community there. And most people did not care at all about Bitcoin. So I was really shocked, actually, because you can't really tell on the internet, like how big something is, like, especially in the early days. So it ended up to be quite a good opportunity because while it was actually a very niche thing that I deeply believed in, and so it was actually quite easy to sort of get opportunities. I ended up going back to grad school and I was like one of the three grad students at Stanford interested in Bitcoin. So I was the first TA of the Bitcoin class at Stanford. And it was sort of just by nature of my interest in this niche thing that, you know, doors kept opening, not because I'm particularly gifted or anything. And then eventually, I worked as a software engineer outside of grad school and grad school for a number of years. I focused on a lot of security stuff and eventually ended up at a fund called Polychain Capital, where I was on the investment team focusing on Bitcoin investments, but I was also ended up building a number of technological things for them because I was an engineer as well, and left to start River in 2018. And that's been what I've been working on ever since.
Alex, I want to dig just a little bit deeper on why you became so attracted to Bitcoin.
I mean, I got in the similar time frame, 2012, 2013, and looked at it as kind of the technology that was missing in the internet, the value part of it, that the internet, you know, was communicating, transacting, you know, information, but not value. And it just, it really hit. And I always looked at it as the tech piece more. And I'm an economics major, so I really didn't come to the economics part of it until like 2020. But I mean, you had those two, you said those two conversations going on in your head at the same time. But when you saw it, what was it that just said, I have to leave everything that I've been doing? I mean, it's a leap from aerospace, which was kind of exciting at that time too, to move all my energy into this new technology. So can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, you know, funny enough, it wasn't really the technology that interested me. It was the economic. It was fulfilling an economic prophecy. And to add some color to that, so in 2012, I read The Denationalization of Money by Friedrich Hayek, and where it's an essay where he questions the concept of central banking and questions the idea of why in a free market economic system is there a monopoly that controls our money, and propose an alternative system. Now, the alternative that he proposed, that part actually didn't really resonate with me. But the questioning money at all resonated with me. And I wanted to actually create my own money that the government couldn't control. And I think maybe to rewind a little bit, like, why was I interested in this? Well, I've always been, I think, very independent. Culturally, my family, we tend to not trust the government very much. And you know, my great grandfather, his gold was confiscated under Executive Order 6102 by FDR. My grandma always made sure to remind me of that. So I've always just been like I think culturally and sort of the way I was raised had sort of an ideological bent that made me just much more open to these kinds of concepts. Just always being skeptical of the powers that be, and so I had no blockers there. I was like, oh yeah, let's decentralize this thing or take this away. And so, whereas I think a lot of people, like for them, like a lot of these centralized institutions are sacred and, you know, like the dollar is great, you know? So that's what I was actually interested in. And then I discovered Bitcoin and I was like, oh my gosh, like this solves the problem better than I ever could. Cause I would still have a centralized company controlling money. And how would that even work? Would that even be legal? Like, how would you make a business out of that? And I was like, this Satoshi guy is 1,000 times smarter than I'll ever be. Like, I just need to work on this. This is the future of money.
And that was, so just to kind of get a picture of the timeline you were talking about there, Alex, when was the first time you read the white paper?
2013.
Okay. So from 13 and then launching River in 2018. So you were well, or, sorry, 18, 19?
Yeah, I launched River in February 2019.
Okay. I just kind of put a timeline to it because it is such a complex topic, right? And sometimes it takes a long time to really get your footing in the space before you have some conviction as you did as a founder. So I guess we can maybe move to the River side of the story.
But maybe I could add one more thing to that, which is, I mean, and for any founders listening, I mean, that time wasn't actually for me to build conviction. I had conviction very early. It was to build my reputation and build the network and build the connections I needed to start the company. So it was actually like the time it took to build my career to the point where I could convince people to invest in my idea. And then, so that's really was the reason for the delay.
I really appreciate what you just mentioned, Alex, because we were offline talking a little bit. I was telling you about my origin story as a co-founder of a Bitcoin startup in 2014. And the reason why I mention it is I kind of got this conviction and I tried jumping on it pretty quickly. And I didn't have lots of the things you just mentioned. And we ran into many obstacles because we didn't have that network, that credibility. So raising funds was difficult, et cetera. So I really appreciate what you just mentioned because it is a very important piece of actually being able to to launch a business, right?
I think probably the move to work at PolyChain was a great way for you to kind of see what was being built in the space. And that time period from 2013 to 18, that was when when you first were introduced, it was only Bitcoin. Like I remember in those days, Coinbase only sold Bitcoin. And then with the Ethereum launch and all the other side chains, and you were probably seeing a lot of projects and being able to kind of think about, but you were always convicted on Bitcoin and you had an idea for River?
More or less. I mean, so when I first got into the space, when I first got into Bitcoin, there were lots of altcoins. There were just no ICOs. So like back then there was lots of alts like Litecoin, Feathercoin, Primecoin. And actually, so I got my altcoining out of the way very early. Like I played around with them for maybe like 6 months and then really quickly realized Bitcoin was the only thing that mattered. By the time ICOs came around in 2017, I had already like got my altcoin phase out of the way. And I was just like, all this is garbage. It's like a total waste of time. And so I have been like pretty more or less a Bitcoin maximalist since 2014.
And that was the problem you identified early on. And, until actually getting going with River, you wanted to build a solution for. I mean, you just observed that it was basically Coinbase is the only player in town. They're dealing with a whole bunch of coins that maybe bring some other vulnerabilities or risk to the business. So was it identifying that as the problem solution you wanted to attack, Alex?
Yeah, so good question. So my vision has always been to build the Bitcoin bank of the world. And for a while, I thought Coinbase was just going to do that. And so I sort of put that idea on the back burner until Coinbase started adding altcoins. And then I was like, oh, like the opportunity's back, because they're getting distracted by what I would consider. And look, no shade, like it's a great business. It makes lots of money. But I kind of have always had a hunch that Coinbase went up a hill that's a local maximum instead of the global maximum. I could be wrong. This hasn't played out yet. Once Coinbase started going down the token path and adding lots of assets and treating all these assets as relatively equal, that reopened the door and I went, okay, like I can start this business.
Can you describe a little bit more what you mean by local maximum versus global maximum?
Sure. Yeah. Sorry. Maybe that's too technical of a term. Like it's a concept sort of in math where it's like, there's like a, you know, if there's a, let's say there's a hill and then there's a mountain further away, right? Well, it's really much easier to go up the hill right in front of you, because you know, you're going to go up and you'll be at the top of something. It's much less certain to chase like this big mountain in the distance. You don't know if you'll actually make it to the top, right? Or maybe it's behind fog. You don't actually know how tall it is. And so that's sort of what I mean. They chase something that was a more certain thing, but I don't think creates long-term value, which I would say is like the speculative relative casino-like product with tokens versus building a Bitcoin native financial institution.
And then when you say global, so you take a more global viewpoint than perhaps other people that are starting businesses in the U.S. I mean, you're viewing Bitcoin as really the change of money for the world. Is that correct? And that's why it's so important for you to create this Bitcoin bank of the world?
Yeah, so I view Bitcoin as on a trajectory to become the world reserve asset, the default global reserve currency. And now, River, we're starting focused on the U.S. So right now, we really operate U.S. only and then international high net worth. That's our first phase. Whether we can expand globally completely eventually is kind of a TBD, right? Financial services tend to be relatively regional, starting where we know we can do well. And then, where that takes us in 5-10 years is still an open question. Once everyone's on Bitcoin and there are like the business model shifts from, converting fiat to Bitcoin to just Bitcoin native things, that's where it's a lot easier to go global. But when you still have to interface with local fiat rails, going global is pretty difficult.
And in that original vision that you mentioned, Alex, of, kind of being the most trusted Bitcoin bank, part of, the term bank carries with it the custodial aspect of a business, right? And you strategically chose to also offer custodial services, which is a big endeavor. I mean, we see many business models in Bitcoin right now. Some choose the self-custodial route. I don't deal with custody. Some choose to custody as River does. They're both, I mean, they're both great in their own merit. But the custodial route definitely brings with it a lot of, you know, regulatory burden, high costs associated with it. Why did you choose the custodial route and identify it as something important?
So, I mean, the main reason is because the vast majority of people don't want a self-custody. The vast majority of people want to trust somebody else to solve their problems. While the Bitcoin ethos is very much one of self-sovereignty, taking custody of your own funds, the reality is if we're going to live in, you know, civilization, there needs to be institutional trust. And most people will delegate knowledge of specialized things like Bitcoin to institutions. And so to build the best product and the easiest experience and to serve what our clients actually want, we have to be able to hold their Bitcoin for them, because the vast majority of our clients don't want to hold their own Bitcoin. So really, it's just that's what the market wants. That's what the market needs. And without it, we wouldn't be able to, you know, be as big as we are. So that's the short answer.
And you layer on top of that custodianship, I think, something that was missing in the space, which is real customer service, like the ability to talk to somebody. I think that you were one of the first entities that, you know, you had that vehicle. I mean, I know I referred my friends and peers to River because you have that ability to communicate with someone, and they're for someone used to private banking or relationship management. So can you talk a little bit about how, when you laid out River, you know who your target client was? Obviously the custodialship aspect that Israel touched on was a core part of that, and then the client service. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the first iteration of River, you know, we basically identified this gap in the market, which was Bitcoin is becoming this asset that more and more people are buying and holding and saving. And, you know, their best option today is Coinbase. And Coinbase, you couldn't even get somebody on the phone. And so, you know, you could have $10 million of Bitcoin in Coinbase, and if something goes wrong, you know, you're forced to email some random person. You have no relationship. And so we realized very quickly that's where our first opportunity was, is like get that sort of mass affluent, high net worth segment, focus on that, provide much better service, have fewer clients in Coinbase, but higher value per client. And that allows us to afford the higher level of service. And that's where we did really well early on, is winning over that segment of the market and positioning ourselves upmarket from Coinbase. And that's where we've mostly stayed. One of the challenges with that was one of the mistakes I would say we made was we sort of branded ourselves as ambiguously high-end. And one of the learnings was that people with money always know somebody richer, so no one thinks they're actually rich. So when you just position yourself as for wealthy people, you know, if there's a surgeon who has $10 million, well, he knows somebody with a Goldman Sachs private client account. He doesn't think he's rich, right? And so nobody thinks they're rich until they have a private jet, is my theory. So, like, it was kind of unclear sometimes to people, like, is River for me? Like, I'm not worth, you know, $1 billion. So that's where, and we just wanted sort of anyone with like a really healthy income. So that was an interesting early challenge, which I think we've solved.
And, you know, that I think, and I'm glad you kind of touch on that, Alex. And I remember seeing when you guys started early on that a little bit of that evolution, actually. I mean, I remember seeing River, the company, the product. I thought, okay, amazing, you know, Bitcoin only, they seem very focused on product, great customer service. I mean, you did hit on some, you know, important, important pain points, I guess, for a well-educated Bitcoin user that, you know, sees these flaws in Coinbase. And I know maybe to your point you're making of making it kind of more accessible to the broader audience, you worked a lot as well on some of the best educational or learning material out there. Of course, you guys have gotten quite involved in Lightning and making just operationally River easier to use. It's a good moment to do an overview of River. Well involved in education, Lightning, you have the business arm, the private client arm, individuals. I mean, what are the different segments of River? Where are you guys most focused, I guess? and what are the main drivers of revenue as well?
Yeah. So, you know, the simplest way to explain our business model at River is Grug Brain. It's, we want to be the best place to buy Bitcoin in the US. And we make money when you buy Bitcoin. We take a fee on that trade, and it sounds very simple, but as anyone who runs a business knows, doing something like that at scale and growing it actually has a lot of challenges. And it is a regulated activity, but we are focused purely on doing that really, really well. And now to do that really, really well, we have to have a number of products and features surrounding that brokerage experience, like custody, like an app that makes that whole end-to-end flow very easy, an onboarding system that allows us to onboard new clients and automate that process and make it a really good experience while also checking off all of our compliance checkboxes and fraud checkboxes. And so a lot of our work just goes into like scaling this up and keeping our operations really, really tight and not messing up. And so that's really our core focus is just keep leveling up the quality of the service and put a lot of work into not messing up. But sort of more strategically, the way we're positioning ourselves is we want to be more and more central to your financial life as Bitcoin grows in its role in the United States. So as Bitcoin becomes a bigger part of your savings, as Bitcoin becomes a bigger part of the population savings, we want River to be a more and more core financial institution for you. And your long-term wealth. And so we're always thinking about what we can be building there to keep moving River in that direction. And so we have something cool coming in a few months that I'm excited to announce, you know, then, but you'll sort of see where we're going once we launch that new feature.
Alex, it feels like when we're talking now in August of 2024, and it feels like 2024 is kind of the year of institutional awareness adoption of Bitcoin with the ETFs and everything coming on board. And one of the things I personally love about Bitcoin is it has gone from individual adoption up the rails to institutional, which is unlike any other asset that where individuals have been kind of left out of that early adoption phase. How are you looking at institutions and how's River's business changed? Are you seeing people now become more aware of Bitcoin as a part of their portfolio strategy, including institutions asking you about buying it? Are you working with registered financial advisors to bring them on board or to give them an option for buying and custodying?
Yes. So institutions is a really broad term. And we've put a lot of work into finding really where our opportunity is and where the opportunity is in general for Bitcoin and institutions. Where we've found success and where we tend to play is really two categories of institutions. One is entities that are sort of used to hold assets for an individual or a family. So maybe it's a trust, maybe it's an LLC, maybe it's a small to medium sized family office. Those kind of entities is sort of one bucket where effectively it's the same thing as a person. There's just a legal entity involved. And so that's one area where we see a lot of people onboarding an institution and buying Bitcoin through it. Then the second bucket is what I would call the operating companies. And the type of operating companies that buy Bitcoin are companies where I call them an orange-pilled dictator, where the CEO or founder can unilaterally make decisions, right? It's a family-owned business. It's just a business with a sole founder who can call the shots. And they themselves believe in Bitcoin. And so typically the path is they buy Bitcoin personally, and then they go, their next question is, well, why don't I buy Bitcoin for my business? I got a bunch of cash in my business. I might as well do that. So we see all sorts of businesses there, everything from the smallest businesses like hot dog stands, plumbers, small family farms, up to publicly traded companies. And that's where I get most excited whenever we onboard another operating company. I'm like, oh, like, what do they do? You know, janitorial services, like all sorts of things. It's pretty amazing.
It is exciting to, kind of see that trend. I mean, to your point, Lynn, of Bitcoin's kind of bottom up adoption, right? Or kind of being adopted from the edges from an individual perspective. I guess the next layered to that, in my view, is precisely those types of, you know, small to medium sized businesses. I mean, the fact that you're seeing more adoption from these privately owned businesses, just I think is very optimistic for the future, you know, like wealth dispersion or monetary system, however you want to put it. But to put numbers on it, Alex, I mean, roughly how many clients on the individual side and then on the business side are you serving? What's the growth been in the recent years?
Yeah, great question. So we don't put out client numbers. We don't release client numbers right now. But we have grown about 300% in the last like 10 to 12 months. In terms of transacting clients. So, you know, clients who are transacting, doing real business with us, not just like signups. And so we have seen a lot of growth. Assets under custody is growing very quickly as well. We will be revealing some information there in the coming month or two. We're rolling out something that will sort of bring more transparency to what we custody. We will have some numbers there, but overall we've been seeing very strong growth. And we're, you know, more or less cash flow positive. It depends on the month. But we run a very sort of healthy, default alive business, with a very healthy balance sheet. And so, you know, one of the things about this industry is kind of always survive. And so, you know, we keep headcount low, we keep costs low. And we're, you know, very conservative with spending and growing our fixed costs.
Let's talk a little bit more about the River team and your, because you, I think you have been known as being running one of the most robust financial services, Bitcoin financial services businesses, but with a low team count and staying laser focused on what you do and more on the engineering side than the marketing side. Can you talk a little bit about the strategy of that and what your team looks like, and is everyone remote, or do you have I know I've seen team pictures where everyone gets together, so you have regular get-togethers, so I'd love to hear about the team dynamics.
Yes, we invest very heavily and put a lot of work into the people side of the business, because that's really the highest leverage work that you can put in as a leader. So we have about anywhere from 45-50 people at River. I always say, you know, more people, more problems. So we have a culture of only hiring when we really need to. Really, that's last on the list of ways to get more done. We invest a lot in automation. We invest a lot in rethinking things from first principles. We invest a lot into finding the best people. One of the things, actually, I think we do differently than a lot of industry companies in the space is we found it's a lot easier to take top talent and turn them into a Bitcoiner than it is to take a Bitcoiner and make them better at a job. And so we take a hiring approach where we filter very much for culture fit, but that doesn't necessarily mean knowing everything about Bitcoin. It means being a really good software engineer. It means being really, being really good at client services, or being really good at, you know, finance, right? And then they inevitably become Bitcoiners by working here. And so that's our approach to hiring. And so we try and have a lot of talent density, I think is the term people use these days. So smaller numbers of very high caliber people.
Well, you're clearly doing a great job at that, Alex. I mean, from an outside perspective, it's very clear that you guys are running a well-oiled, you know, well-oiled business. And maybe touching on that a little bit more, I mean, you personally, Alex, so you are CEO and CTO. You explained you came from, you know, more of an engineering background. I imagine there must be, in these few years of running Rivers, some learnings, maybe some mistakes or challenges that you came across. How is wearing that dual hat? I mean, engineering and, you know, product development, it's a very different mindset than being strategic about what product to develop. And, you know, any insights you can give us as far as how that dual role has been for you?
Yeah, well, so I have a great team. Right. I have a great leadership team. I have a great COO, great director of product, great engineering management. So I'm surrounded by great people. But in my role, what I've found is being CEO and CTO at the same time is really highly effective, because modern companies, especially a company like this, you know, at the end of the day, the whole purpose of computers is just to help us do the job. And so whether we have humans doing things or computers doing things, like, it's, you know, sort of accomplishing the same job. So why not have the computers do them? And so being a technical CEO allows me to sort of see the full picture and constantly sort of optimize the company as we continue to automate. That's one side of things. And I've developed like a management philosophy as we've grown the company that works for us. And it focuses a lot on simplicity. And that simplicity is both on the technical side and operationally and just across the entire company. So I take sort of an engineering mindset and sort of to the entire company. And by being a technical CEO, there's also a very close, like, engineering is very close to everyone else in the company. And so engineering is constantly in the loop on how we can do things all across the company better. It's not just siloed off to the side and handed tasks, you know, to do in isolation. So I think it creates a much more sort of like cohesive team. And yeah, I know that sounds a little like fluffy and woo woo. Some lessons. Yeah. So some lessons I've learned. Simplicity, like, it matters so much. Like, keeping things, like, complexity is the root of all evil. Put in the work to keep things simple. If you look at the SpaceX rocket engines, the Raptor engines, and you look at each generation, they're on generation 3 now, they keep getting simpler. You can just see them. You know, there's like pictures of these 3 different engines. And over time, if you put in more and more work, things should get simpler. And that's sort of something I try to inculcate into the culture at River. And you know, we've learned that time and time again. Something else I've learned is don't get distracted. And I knew this in theory, but you don't really understand it until you actually like make a mistake, where you do something that's apart from your core business and it starts to pull management in another direction and you start to have to balance 2 different needs. And all of a sudden you're not able to give the core business as much attention as it should to just keep that going really well. So another thing I've learned is basically like stick to your core, build iteratively off of your core, and have one flywheel that you can keep pushing on, especially if you're startup size. If you're some big, huge company, like, that's another story. But that's another big, been another big learning for us. Keep the focus. Keep the entire, like, there's beauty in having the entire company fully aligned, not like having venture bets on the side and, you know, these kinds of things just totally distract you. And then a third thing has been, especially in a business like this, you need to invest about half of your resources and your time into just keeping things, like, improving the iceberg below the water, right? But the amount of time building new features is going to be less than half of the amount of, like, engineering time or resources you put in. The vast majority of resources is going to be constantly improving your foundation, your automation, your systems, your operations. It really pays dividends when you put in that work.
Alex, kind of tying those 3 core principles, which I think are really beautifully put, with the funding that River has had in order to facilitate your scaling, you've raised over $52 million. And what's interesting is in the conversations that Israel and I had with other founders, they've been funded primarily by VCs who are focused completely on Bitcoin, that have the Bitcoin ethos and the time preference. And your funding is very different. I mean, you've had funding from a number of VC funds and investors that kind of play in the entire realm of Web3 or crypto. And in particular, Obi from Fatty was talking to us recently and said that he had turned down funding from those sorts of investors because he didn't want to lose his focus and be able to dedicate himself. His concern was that they would encourage him to tokenize or spread into other areas beyond Bitcoin. And that hasn't been obviously a concern of yours. Or how do you work with your investors? And can you explain a little bit your philosophy of raising from a more diverse group of investor base?
Yeah, it's a good question. And on the surface, you know, I could see how, you know, you could think like, oh, well, if you're raising from non-Bitcoin only VCs, they might push you into doing altcoins. Whereas, you know, that's really not, it really just depends, right? And so for us, like, I have very close relationships with the people that we've raised from. I know them deeply, and they deeply believe in our vision and what we're working on. And I have full control. I still control, you know, the company. So it's frankly just not a concern. And additionally, they knew what they were investing in. And for example, if you're a multi-coin fund, right? Well, they also need Bitcoin investments. So, you know, you can think of it just from a portfolio diversification strategy. They invested in River because we're Bitcoin only. Yeah, they might be a multi-coin fund, but they can't be a multi-coin fund and not have a Bitcoin venture investment too. You know, actually, if we weren't Bitcoin only, that'd almost be messing with their the point of their investment in River. So that's really actually the reality of things is, you know, investors were very, you know, bought in from the beginning with what we're working on.
I understand that, but you've made it clear that you really like having the control of your company, and I really appreciate that. How do you look, or how do you talk to your investors about the long-term, you know, perspective of the exit of their investment in River? Because that would be, I don't know what your path is. Are you thinking that you might go public at some point, or do you want to retain control? And how do you think of that from a long-term perspective?
I definitely keep in mind different options for the future of the company, but really I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about it. What I focus on is building a growing, profitable business. Because, you know, if you think about all these different possibilities, well, actually they all reduce to the same thing to be doing now, which is to build a really good business. If you build a really good business, all of these doors are open to you in the future. And so that's what I tell my investors. You know, we're not going public next year. Like, that's not, like, there's a lot of downsides of going public. Frankly, the idea doesn't excite me. I'd rather give investors and early employees liquidity through some other mechanism. So I don't like to talk about exits because also what would I do if I don't know, I want to run the company. I just want to keep building a growing, highly profitable business that helps accelerate the adoption of Bitcoin and is riding this huge macro wave that's, I think, going to continue to accelerate for the coming decades. So that's how I think about it.
And to that point, Alex, I mean, when you think of the coming decade as, you know, CEO of River, how are you incorporating, and maybe you're not at that point yet, you know, I'm not sure if you've spoken to this prior, but are you thinking about a Bitcoin allocation to your treasury? Do you have some sort of treasury strategy, or what are your thoughts on that for a startup pre and post profitability?
Oh yeah. I mean, well, over half of our treasury is in Bitcoin. For us, it's a no-brainer because if Bitcoin doesn't work, this company doesn't work. So owning Bitcoin in the treasury, as long as we have enough cash to, you know, withstand Bitcoin volatility, is just a free compounding factor for the value of the company. So we're stacking Bitcoin. We've been buying Bitcoin since the very beginning. And so we have a very healthy Bitcoin position. For other companies, you know, I think it's, you know, it depends, right? If I was starting a business that was totally not Bitcoin related, I'd buy some Bitcoin, but I wouldn't be focused on that. I'd be focused on building a really good company and getting product market fit and getting to cash flow positive situation. And, you know, maybe allocating 10 or 20% of the treasury to Bitcoin. But when you're running a business, you know, you're not running a hedge fund, right? And so I wouldn't like go all in on Bitcoin and in a business unless it was a profitable cash generating business. And I said, you know, I'm going to allocate X percent of my profits to Bitcoin.
Yeah, I appreciate shedding light on that. And I think it's in many ways, it is similar to the individual's dynamic to, I guess, being allocated in Bitcoin. Broader demographics of your client base, Alex. I mean, have you seen any shifts or trends that it's maybe broadening? I don't know, maybe 1 or 2 years ago, that age range of your typical client was still skewed to the younger end. I mean, I'm sure it maybe still is, but do you see any signs that, you know, it's maturing in that sense, that you are getting more, you know, 40, 50 plus categories interested in Bitcoin? Or I guess, what are you seeing there?
Yeah, you know, honestly, if anything, our average age may have gone down. We used to get like a lot, like mostly older people. And okay, we still do. So yeah, because that's where we kind of won in the market, right? Like, those people, when they went to Coinbase, they were just like, what the heck is going on? When they went to River, it was like an experience that was easy for them. So in a way, actually, you know, we've just become more generally appealing to everyone. And so because of that, the median age has probably gone down a little bit. But, you know, our biggest accounts are, like, the account value is heavily correlated with age, right? The older you are, the richer you are. It's generally true. And so, you know, our largest accounts are, you know, definitely skew older. And, you know, our private client, you know, private client tier, sort of the high net worth tier, definitely skews to the older end. But, you know, just in the last 2 days, I mean, we saw, you know, a huge jump in the number of whole coiners on River, you know, just people with one whole Bitcoin in their account. And a lot of those people are, you know, anywhere from 25 to 35.
You know, super interesting. And I think I saw a post yesterday that you mentioned your buy volume on the brokerage was around 80%, which, you know, it's interesting. I mean, to me, it says you have a pretty educated, you know, or well-informed client base, because they're kind of putting the practice of, you know, the famous Buffett, you know, buy fear, sell greed kind of philosophy. I mean, 80%.
Because this week has been unusually volatile to the downside in Bitcoin. So just to give a reference as to why that's an important statistic.
Yes. Yeah. Yesterday, the price, the last 2 days, the price went down, 20%. And I think that's one of the other ideas behind River is we're focused on people who are accumulating Bitcoin for the long term. In contrast to a Coinbase, where they're focused on people who want to speculatively trade lots of different assets. So the behavior you see and the types of people and the demographics you see are actually very different. So our client base tends to skew very heavily towards long-term thinkers.
Just giving a perspective of the next 6 months or year for River, your long-term thoughts, what do you have planned for the company, or any changes? I mean, you mentioned that you had some news coming out, so maybe you can't talk about that, but anything you can talk about to share with us, how you envision the company growing with all these shifts?
Well, we are going to become much more central to your financial life. So that's like a little hint I can give of some of the things we're working on. We are investing a lot continually in security and custody stuff. So that's another theme you'll see us announcing some things in. I think by the end of the year, River will, I think, be positioned very, very clearly as a leader when it comes to Bitcoin custody in the United States. A lot of the work I'm actually most excited about is stuff that no one outside will ever see. It's internal automation and improvement of processes to allow us to prepare for that next level of scale. So that's all that stuff like below the iceberg that you're not seeing, all the things about engineering, security, reliability, automation. We have a new app coming out. So within, I think like a week or two, there'll be a new iOS app shipping. So I can talk about that. That'll be a big upgrade for anyone on iOS. It'll be a totally redesigned app experience and should be much nicer. What else?
That kind of leads me to a question that I've been meaning to ask you. It's like, we've really been talking about River as kind of the bastion and store value, you know, people buying and holding. You also have been known for doing a lot of research in Lightning and the River Link product, which is fantastic, that really allows people to use it more as medium of exchange, or at least ease in sending it to other people. So can you talk to us a little bit about, maybe this is if it becomes more a part of your day-to-day financial life, and I won't ask you to elaborate on that if you can't, but you know, the focus of River on Lightning and your groundbreaking work in researching and contributing to the Lightning network development. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you personally feel it's so essential to Bitcoin's development?
Yeah. So, you know, we have an API that powers Lightning transactions for a number of apps, including the Chivo wallet in El Salvador. And, you know, we've been running Lightning nodes at River since we launched in 2019. So we have some of the oldest, biggest Lightning nodes on the network. The Lightning network is really cool. It's a really key part of Bitcoin scaling, but I am also very pragmatic about it. We do it because it's fun and interesting. Some people use it, But by and large, you know, Bitcoin isn't still broadly adopted as a medium of exchange. People still mostly want to pay and think, move dollars around. And so because of that, you know, it's not like we've seen outsized sort of growth on the Lightning side. We have it because we want to be ready for when Bitcoin is ready to be adopted as a medium of exchange. There's just so much work to get there still. And we want to help do that work. And that's how we view our Lightning Network work. And so frankly, we do it because it's cool, not because it's something that, you know, is really heavily impacting the business today.
What about stable coins on, you know, with Taproot assets? It looks like that might be a future development or a possibility of having more. And maybe this doesn't impact River so much. I mean, a lot of the companies at Israel, like, we have this perspective of being outside of the of thinking outside of the U.S. and where stable coins are such an important part. And I just feel that that's a, you know, the ability to transfer, lock in the value of a dollar, but digitally. How are you thinking about that?
Yeah. So, you know, stable coins come into Taproot assets on Lightning. So, you know, being able to transact in dollars effectively in the Lightning Network. That's a very interesting trend. I'm excited to see where that goes. Stablecoins aren't interesting to our clients because our clients have dollars already. And stablecoins are fundamentally more interesting when dollars are hard to get and you live in a country with a really bad currency. So I'm excited for the prospect just in general, but where River plays in that is still TBD. Maybe we'll do some routing stuff when it comes to, like, swapping stablecoins and Bitcoin, but I'm not quite sure yet.
Oh, well, thanks for, you know, sharing all of the things going on, you know, behind the curtains there, Alex. And I mean, you mentioned earlier a lot of that work to optimize, you know, River, the automation, making sure you can withstand high transaction volume as you grow. I mean, to your credit, it in certain moments that is actually quite visible, because we've seen certain moments of, you know, market volatility and high stress transaction days where River's been exceptionally good at maintaining that stability, right, of your operation. So, you know, to your credit, a lot of that work on the back end is actually, you know, it's kind of proving its course in a way. As River grows, Alex, I mean, speaking to maybe, you know, the more traditional side of finance, how do you view the, with regulatory developments as well? It seems to be somewhat clear that there's going to be more and more involvement from, you know, traditional banks and traditional custodians into the space. I think it's just the natural course of where things are heading. How do you view that as far as how River's positioned from a competitive standpoint? Where do you kind of see these two worlds merging in the next, you know, say 5-10 years?
Yeah, so I actually gave a short talk about this at the Bitcoin conference. I see Bitcoin brokerages moving closer and more into the fiat world, and the fiat world moving more into the Bitcoin world and starting to overlap. But by and large, like, we work very closely with banks. We have to, because we're not a bank ourselves, you know, in the sense of, like, having a bank charter at the federal level and an account at the Fed. So we need to partner with banks to process payments and things like this. So I think there's going to be a lot of partnerships as well. There's just things we can do a lot better than, you know, think of it this way. If Bank of America wanted to add Bitcoin, that would, one, it would take forever and the experience would be kind of clunky and, you know, it wouldn't be quite right. Like, we would just be able to do a lot better. So it comes down to focus again. So, you know, where we started with Bitcoin and built around that, and that, like, the product you have, the service you can offer, the level of delight you can give your clients is a lot different than, you know, a bank just, like, adding a Bitcoin button. And so I think that the macro wave we're riding will continue to propel our growth. And certainly other people will hop on board, but I think it's just going to take them. They're going to move a lot slower.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you're spot on there, Alex. I mean, I actually used to work at Swift, and I know firsthand that, you know, banks, UX and automation aren't their strong points. You know, they're very good at doing other things, but, you know, I do think there's just going to be some things that an institution like River just, you know, does tenfold better. And it makes more sense, right, to specialize in what you're good at. But I know we're kind of, you know, getting close to the hour. Lynn, anything else that we should ask Alex or cover?
Yeah, I did want to ask Alex to share some just of his own personal wisdom with our audience. You really had a very strategic and tactical way about building your business, where you built a network, you looked at how you would be able to propel it forward before you actually launched. Given that today is a different day and time, and there's a lot more interest and probably money interested in flowing into Bitcoin, but what advice would you give to a founder who's thinking of who wants to be in the Bitcoin space, or even an employee? You know, how do they get involved in working for a Bitcoin company?
Yeah, so I'll start with the employees. My advice there is always just be really good at something, right? Be really good at something that's generally valuable. Like a high quality company will hire a software engineer because they're a good software engineer, not because they have a good Bitcoin Twitter, you know, profile, and they're a mediocre software engineer. Just be really good at something. Like that's, you don't necessarily have to flavor it with Bitcoin. Like, sure, yeah, build Bitcoin projects, show your skills, you know, things like that. But a Bitcoin company's needs aren't really that different, because there isn't that much protocol engineering. If you want to be a protocol engineer, you want to work at like Lightning Labs or something at that level of the protocol, or you want to be a core dev, then my advice is just start doing that work. But you know, that's my advice to employees. Just be the best in your field and pick a field that isn't going to go away. Pick a field that's going to be in demand. Now, on the founder side of things, I would say put a lot of work into strategic thinking. There aren't that many business models in Bitcoin, right? So think really, really hard, especially because Bitcoin is not yet a broadly used medium of exchange. Think really hard of whether your idea is a good idea or you're just doing this idea because you like Bitcoin. Just because you like Bitcoin doesn't necessarily mean there's a Bitcoin business for you to build. You'll also get a lot of signal around ideas that are bad ideas. So you'll get a lot of signal on Bitcoin Twitter or in other places by people who have Bitcoin, and they'll encourage you and say, oh, like, that's cool, go build this thing. But often they encourage bad ideas. They're encouraging you to build something that just isn't a good idea. They wouldn't actually pay for themselves. So be really, really realistic and be very critical about, from a business lens, not ideologically. Think from a business lens, objectively, about the thing you're thinking of building. Because there are very few business models that have made anyone money in Bitcoin. Brokerage is basically it. And so, you know, there's some custody stuff, like self-custody stuff. The market for that is relatively small. So I would actually say proceed with caution. Be very, very critical about the business model. Be very strategic and put the thought up front before starting to build something. I know that might not be what people want to hear, but is the truth.
Thanks for that advice. Alex, maybe circling it back to the beginning, just lastly, I want to touch on this. You know, you mentioned for you, it was easy to see the problem, easy to grasp why, you know, maybe you shouldn't be as trustful of how money is built today. For some people, and you trace that all the way back to your grandma, right? So it was maybe already kind of a core part of you. For many people, it can still be very difficult to see maybe the cracks in what we're living through from the monetary system lens. Even harder when you're talking about something that's, you know, people mention these words, you know, bearer instrument, digital asset. But to many people, that just sounds very obscure. What kind of advice would you give to someone who's still having a hard time understanding why, you know, my current monetary system as is doesn't work for me?
Yeah, you know, I think try to understand things from first principles. Try and step back and question like the fundamental assumptions about the system we have. Like, read about the history of money, right? Read the denationalization of money. Expose yourself to ideas that challenge the existing system and just see what conclusions you come to. You know, I'm not going to convince anybody that, you know, they shouldn't save in dollars over Bitcoin. People have to find their own way, and eventually the market will decide. But, you know, I would definitely read things that question the system we have, because that's how you start to see ideas that you weren't exposed to before. But it's not something that someone can really handhold you through. Like, if you're not curious enough to figure this out yourself, then that's fine. But, you know, it's not something you're just going to, like, stumble into.
Alex, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate all your wisdom and your perspective. And Israel and I are both big fans of River and big fans of the work that you're doing. So we, you know, we look forward to having you back at a future time and just giving us updates on River and how the company is growing. But thank you so much for all that you've shared with us today.
And lastly, Alex, where can people find you? And are you going to be at any conferences in the future? What's the easiest way to get in touch?
Well, our website is river.com, and we're at River on Twitter, and I'm at Leishman, my last name, on Twitter, so you can find me there. I will probably be at LubitConf in Buenos Aires. I'm not sure if I'll be at any other events in the U.S. in the next few months, but I'll definitely be online.
We'll include those handles in the notes. Well, we appreciate the time, Alex. Enjoyed having you on.
Thanks.